we are living in a fantastic time. I mean, a lot of technologies have also matured right now. So, you know, you're getting to a place where we've been speaking about certain things for so many years. I mean, throw your mind back 15 years ago when we first met in that era, you know, talking tech and the stuff we had then.
It was quite...
And the thoughts we had about the future and where we
you
are.
You know what's so interesting? The future has evolved even more amazingly than you would have thought, if that makes sense. And yet, I'm not blown away by what's happened. In other words, at that stage, being a bit of a science fiction fan and fantasy fan and reading all this stuff, everything that we imagined then is now actual reality.
But we're not as... Are you saying you're not as like blown away by what we've got?
I'm not blown away.
Is that the evolutional...
Well, think about it. Hell, in, it. It's not even the evolution. Think about hell in the Space Odyssey 2001.
Yeah.
I mean, hell did stuff then, or it was all staged. It wasn't real. It wasn't actually happening. But you imagined communicating with an AI. You imagined it going rogue. You imagined it locking guys out. You imagined it. You didn't even have to imagine it was happening on screen. It was real.
Well, that's how it became a reality for us, because we could envisage
cause and effect.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, so all the technology they used then, all the communicators in Star Trek, all the crap that looked science fiction-y and set the scene, the guys from the 80s and the 90s and the early noughties who grew up with tech being part of their lives and had an interest were aware of all these technologies. The thing was, then they were fantasy. They weren't real, and yet they were part of the conversation. They were part of what you watched.
They were just one step removed because
yes,
we didn't have the tech.
You couldn't walk into Dion Wired and buy it. But it existed in the consciousness of all of us. And maybe that's why it actually does exist today. It needed someone to dream about it.
Yeah, the idea or the technology execution.
And they've executed. I mean, AI now, you can have a full-on conversation with hell. In real. Watson's shown it. Lots of guys have shown it. Siri's a bit doff. But Google Assistant is getting there. And I mean, that's available in a $450 Android phone that you can pick up at the corner cafe.
It's crazy.
So
we've jumped ahead of ourselves here.
Anyway,
welcome to the Best in Tech. That was a little impromptu intro with Stephen, my guest Stephen Ambrose. Welcome to the show, Stephen.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what you do. I mean, we've heard you for the last minute or so
going on
about technology. But where do you fit in the space? I mean, we've known each other for many, many, many years, just hovering around the media space, talking tech all the time. This has been a podcast a long time in the making. But tell us a little bit about what you do.
Well, my history is really very interesting. I've always loved tech. From when I was a little boy, stole my father's hi-fi set. In those days, I must tell you, this is dating me, it had valves and a magic eye. And I stole this thing, and I was fascinated by it. So I pulled it apart, I rebuilt it, I made it better. And that one thing led to another. Then I became an accountant. Don't ask me how that happened. But I did it. I became an accountant. And as soon as I could, I escaped. But what I did all through the years that I studied is I actually was involved in tech. I imported, built, distributed audio equipment. Because in the 80s, that was the technology
of
choice. The audio
file was the tech.
That was the high-tech stuff. If you wanted to be into tech, I mean, computers in those days filled rooms and needed special floors. And, you know,
it wasn't
the whole
stuff you tinkered with at home.
No, there was no tinkering going on there. Hard drives needed forklifts.
Good old days.
You know, in the days when metal was metal and hard drives were bigger than rooms. Anyway, and there were eight meg. There
and
you
now
go.
I just did something on M.2 SSD. I mean, that thing is the size of a sticker.
It's a little sticker chewing gum.
Ridiculous.
And off you go. So anyway, so that got me into it. And over the years, my interest in technology, audio, music has just continued growing. And fascinating over the years, did lots of things. But in the end, I ended up becoming a consultant in the technology space. So I work with a lot of companies on near future technology challenges. I'm not a futurist. I don't deal with, you know, the stuff that's coming in 10, 20, 30 years' time. But every company, certainly companies in South Africa, and a lot of multinationals who come into the country, there's specific challenges that exist within the operational technology space that need explanation. And it's not like people don't know what they are. It just needs an external view, someone who's got a nice helicopter view of what's going on. And having been in the space, operate in the space for so many years, been to all these conferences, understood how all the technologies hang together, I work with a lot of companies to help them to integrate this into their planning, their strategic planning going forward, and operationally, how does it actually fit into what they do and how they do it? So in some ways, I play a catalyst. What if you change this stuff? How would that affect your business? Or rather, this is the stuff that's happening now, and if you don't use it, what's going to happen to your business? So that's my space. Now, to feed my passion for tech, I've got a weekly tech show on a regional radio station called Chai FM, where we talk consumer and other tech. We talk cloud, we talk AI, we talk anything, in fact.
All the good, juicy topics.
Absolutely. Anything that that has any interest or connection to tech. I mean, I've even spoken to Philips about some lighting product.
Because some great stuff.
Yeah, I mean, there's some amazing tech going on in lighting today. And what's interesting, and what a lot of people don't realize, is the science behind lighting. Everyone thinks just a light bulb you screw in the wall. There's tech behind that. And
conversation. Everything's got a touch on
tech. This morning I said to a guy, you know, who was talking about the digitalization of business and tech in business. And you know what's interesting? I said, very simple question. What business operates without tech? I mean, as simple as using your cell phone, every business is tech-based.
Yeah, that's kind of usually the first touch point. Especially in South Africa, I mean, your mobile phone is your main computer in many ways.
Well, think about it. It is an unbelievably powerful computer. So that's what I do. That's where I operate. And it's great fun. And the benefit of being involved in technology is it never stands still.
Yeah,
every day you turn around, you don't have enough hours in the day to read about what's going on, never mind experience it. It's brilliant.
So in your capacity as a consultant looking ahead into the future, what are some of the trends that is there any trends that you've seen or that you can identify that you want
to share? The biggest trend that I see right now, and I've been to a couple of shows in the last year, and it's absolutely clear that the age of the gadget is over. Now, not to say there aren't tons of shiny gadgets out there. There aren't lots of laptops and bits and pieces you can buy. But none of them are standalone. You know, at one stage, you used to go and buy a thing which did a thing. It had a function. It could be super high tech. It could be whatever it was, but it was a thing.
Your hi-fi is a perfect example.
Well, yeah.
It played music. The radio, and it did had an LP and maybe a cassette deck.
Correct. Now, everything is connected to something else. Everything is multi-layered, multifaceted, operational. I mean, there's that picture that did the rounds for a while, that back in the 80s, if you needed to do the stuff you do in your cell phone, you had a room full of gadgets between answering machines and cameras. And now it's all in a tiny 180-gram thing you pop in your pocket and don't even think about. So the big trend, apart from the big stuff everyone's talking about, cloud and AI and all those sort of things, the big trend is that the gadget is becoming more and more part of what you do and what you have and what you operate, and it's not standalone. Every single thing is connected to something else, and it's a challenge because it's easy to talk about a thing. It's very difficult to talk about an ecosystem or a platform or that sort of stuff because people lose you. In fact, the minute I say platform, everyone imagines waiting for the train.
The old ecosystem.
They're thinking about what's going on at the Kruger Park. But these are the big buzzwords that are coming. Everything is becoming a platform.
So everything's part of an ecosystem. It's going to kind of fall away as an independent thing. It's just going to become part of. So you're not going to necessarily have many things that do things separately. It'll be like a phone that has a camera and a voice recorder and a screen, for example.
Part of the whole sort of Internet of Things, part of this whole intelligent everything, is the fact that devices are becoming much more intelligent, the edge devices. So the things that report information to other things are becoming super smart in and of themselves. So, for example, you used to have an answering machine in the home. It took messages for when you weren't there. Well, now, as we were talking earlier about AI and everything, and hell, the computer, you will have a camera that records what's going on in the house. It'll allow you to see who's at the front door. It'll allow you to let those people drop parcels in your front door. You know, and it's one device that's connected to other devices. There'll be voice activated, and it's not even science fiction. It's happening right now. Amazon, for example, in the US, if you want, certain cars are connected. And if you want, what you do is you tell them you want your order, but you're not at home. So there's no one there to collect your order. No problem. Give them your registration number and they'll deliver the goods to your boot. They get to your boot. They've got a little cell phone or smartphone. They type in a code. Your boot pops open. They drop the parcel in your boot and close the boot. Thank you very much. Off they go. Or even better than that, if you buy one of their special doorbells and door locks, when they get to your door, they put in the code, your door unlocks, they pop it inside and close the door. So
technology like that is fantastic, but also, I mean, it's the kind of thing that works in, only works in certain societies where trust is an expected norm, I guess.
Yes and no, but this actually gets around the whole trust thing. I mean, it always freaked me out. I've got mates who live in San Diego. You order something from Amazon. They're in a suburb like where we are now. It's very simple. Get home. There's all the parcels outside the gate in this road, just lying there waiting. That's so. That's a trust society.
That's very trust.
But
yeah.
In a major city, it probably doesn't work that way. Mm. And imagine, and that's why the whole idea of having a fully connected, integrated doorbell, lock, boot, car system, where you can have deliveries made to you securely, with secured people behind doors. But it's the infrastructure. It's the whole connection between all these various gadgets that make it entirely possible. An authorized delivery agent from Amazon has got the correct technology and codes to get to your address, open your car, open your door, drop the goods, lock everything up again. It's all recorded. There's a record of absolutely everything. So it's entirely safe and secure. And it's that level of connectivity amongst various gadgets that is going to change. Was not going to. It has changed everything. That's why I'm saying it's always great to have the latest smartphone. It's always great to have the latest. I don't know what else we talk about, but come to think of it, just struck me. But in and of themselves, they're useless, shiny, useless things unless you put a SIM in. The minute you connect that smartphone to the network, suddenly it becomes everything.
Isn't that a scary thing? I mean, your this device you spend so much money on is essentially worthless if it doesn't have an internet connection.
Correct.
But that's a scary thought. Even with a SIM card and making just calls, it's still...
But your home becomes useless without a SIM card. Your car is going to become fairly useless without a connection. Everything you own is landing up becoming connected to everything else. And that is where all the change is happening, because business processes are changing. Companies are emerging. Services that you never even thought of. Uber is the classic one. Everyone talks about Uber. But all these things were never possible in the analog era. And that's where we're going. And we're getting to the point where we're post-digital. In fact, talking digital is pretty stupid, because what isn't digital? What isn't electronic, what isn't connected at some level? When last did you walk into a shop and get a handwritten invoice? I mean, a simple little thing like that. You know, so we, and all that stuff is becoming automated. That is probably the next huge trend. So we've gone digital, we've gone connected, everyone's connected at some stage, even in a place like South Africa. I mean, 95 million cellular connections in a country with around about 55 million people, give or take. So, I mean, that makes no sense. And if, in fact, if you start adding some of the other types of connectivity, machine to machine and that, probably we're talking over 100 million connections in a country of 57 million people. Why? Why would you want that? And the reason is because things are connecting. And things need, you know, ostriches, traffic lights, you name it, are connecting. So, yeah, absolutely, we live in a crazy time where the technology is becoming less visible, but much more useful than it's ever been for the general people. And even those that don't, in fact, those that have never had an affinity to tech, like I go out, go out hunting for the latest thing. Most people don't care. They just sit around and they wait for it to happen.
Exactly.
But suddenly the stuff is happening at a level and a scale that is actually changing everything. Predictive analytics, another area that is becoming a huge, huge thing. All the big guys, AWS, that's Amazon Web Services, Google Services, Microsoft with their Azure platform, IBM with their Watson platform. These are all server-based, massive server-based platforms. They're all coming to Africa. The first IBM instance is happening in Kenya, much to the horror of South Africa.
Yeah.
But AWS is coming to Cape Town and Joburg now. It's on. It's live.
Well, once you've got a connection to a place, right, that barrier to entry to that place is so much easier to get into, because once you've got a connection, you're kind of connected to the outside world. You're connected to these services.
Correct.
And that's like you're saying, that's what the IoT, the Internet of Things, is really going to...
Well, yes and no. The biggest, again, the hype and the buzzwords. Everyone's heard the hype. Everyone's heard about Internet of Things. Mm. No one actually understands what it means. But when you see the truck going, we live near the Delta. You see them setting up an event at the Delta, and a million chairs arrive, and a whole host of portable toilets, and all sorts of bits and pieces. Now, imagine if all those things were connected.
Mm.
Now, hang on, stop imagining. A whole chunk of those things are connected. They know where every chair is. They know where every toilet is. They know where it moved from. And once you've got that sort of information, how does that change the way your business works? Because if you know where everything is, and you know how long it's been in use, or what it's doing at any particular time, whether it's moving down the highway, things like that, it changes the way you think about what you do with people.
Yeah.
The same way as Uber having a system like that where they know where every car is, that where there are 30 cars looking for one guy who says, I need a lift. Suddenly the whole system that designates which guy picks it up, how he gets there, that type of stuff is really smart. And instead of waiting 20 minutes and waving your arm in the air for a taxi, you hit a little thing on your smartphone, and four or five of them whizzing around, one of them comes and picks you up in a minute. And that's the type of efficiency that the Internet of Things, and those are all Internet of Things, because the car's connected to the platform, the washing machine's connected to the platform. So these are real.
Can your fridge tell you what food you have in your fridge these days?
Oh, listen, if you prepare to spend the money, both LG and Samsung have got fridges with cameras.
But that kind of thing, I mean, I guess it's a novelty way of showing what a connected device can do. It's just kind of showing a consumer. There's some cool stuff that really brings into your household when you have a connected device. It's making it real for many people rather than showing them.
That's why I say we've gone past the digital thing. The reason your chair is connected now, just by the by, since you brought it up, is to tell you to get the hell off your chair. Get up and go for a walk, because it's connected to your heart rate. And, you want to be healthy, so it knows so much about you. And little things like that. Another real Internet of Things data science thing that is just fascinating is the whole medical imaging business. Think about it. You go to a hospital and you have an MRI. How many people are having an MRI at any one point in time in the world? Millions. And how many people or technicians are looking at those scans? How many doctors are checking to see what's going on? Mm. Now imagine if you could connect all those MRIs. Okay, let's stop imagining. Guess what Philips and Siemens and these guys who make MRIs are doing? They're connecting all these things because they're digital. The data's stored somewhere. Well, now it's not stored somewhere. It's now stored in the cloud on a platform like AWS.
And any doctor can look at it. If there's no doctor available locally, like in Africa anyway, so you have somebody overseas.
I saw a product now called a doctor in a box, which was being highlighted at an event this week in Johannesburg.
Oh, right.
But basically, it's a complete diagnostic tool in a tiny little box. And what it does, it has connectivity. So a doctor sitting in Kigali or in anywhere, doesn't matter, can send this little thing out with a technician. He plugs it on, checks your heart rate, everything, and he can diagnose you remotely without ever being near you. But smarter than that, all that information, as I said with the scans, gets centrally placed on a database, and then this massive computing power, all this, I won't call it AI, but this machine learning can scan through 3 million brain scans, whereas the average doctor may not see a couple of thousand in his life.
And certainly that must also have a massive impact, a beneficial impact on understanding humans, understanding disease.
Exactly.
What happens with the body? Because we don't know much, really. I mean, for all that we do, there's a lot of things we don't know.
And every time, it's like an onion. Every time you peel a layer, there's another layer of understanding. But the difference is in sheer quantity of data. Things can be understood and viewed in a way that have never, ever been done before in the entire existence of humanity.
Mm.
So there are such subtle I mean, it's all cool to have a smartphone. But I mean, when you think about where it goes, where it connects, how all of this stuff is hanging together, and more fundamentally, how it's changing what you're doing. The predictive stuff is ridiculous. So, for example, if you've got a business platform that's running and you sell ice cream, and you know from all the data collected that there are 5 events in your city that week, and you've got a connection to the weather, so you know if it's going to be hot or cold, and you've got the data for the last 5 years of sales that on a cold day you sell 20% less ice creams than on a hot day. And you know where these events are because, and you know the people are all moving towards those events, and you know where to place your little ice cream trucks. You can completely change the way you sell a silly little thing like a popsicle.
You're not guessing.
You're no longer guessing. Absolutely. Because if you don't have any, you can't sell any. So as a business, if you use this data and you use all these sensors and you start picking up information, where the information is freely available. Event information is freely available. It's all online.
That's going to be my next question. Like, it's fantastic to have all this data and the capability to capture all this data. But what we've seen with companies like DNA, 23andMe, you know, the DNA company, what has been said that they are basically, you know, recording everybody's DNA. It's that value. There's a lot of value in owning that right. Apparently, you sign away the right to own
the information attached to your DNA.
Yeah, I mean, when we're looking at a more practical example for, you know, for lack of a better word, the IoT landscape, what about, you know, for this business owner? I mean, if the data isn't freely available to him, if he has to pay lots of money for that, where do you think there's going to be a balance?
Well, I think, you know, when you get back to where this all starts, data, I mean, for many years I was involved in actual market research. Now, you think about how that industry has changed. Go on the web. Anyone who's semi-proficient at trawling Google and the various Wolfram Alpha and the various information sources can pretty much find out anything about anything. You want to know about consumer preference? It's on the web. Why? Because it's being picked up by various sensors, by not what people say they do, but what they actually do. The biggest flaw in any research was you spoke to people. There was always bias, call it cognitive, whatever you want, but people told you what they wanted to tell you. So you'd have to do 1,000 or 10,000 samples to get a pretty good idea of what's going on. Yeah. Today on the web, to get a sample of 10,000 is nothing. You can get a sample of 10 million just through a click of a smartphone. So where we sit in the world is that information may still have a value and it may still cost money, but generally, absolutely everything you want to know about pretty much everything is available to someone who's prepared to look. And if that someone is a computer program that can sift through this information quicker than any human being can, you can generate unbelievable amounts of data, not for free, because there's a cost of doing this stuff and the cost of using the platform. Yeah. But the difference is, 10 years ago, only companies that could afford data mining processes and systems and scientists and whatnot were massive, massive companies. Today, you can have processing power that makes that look trivial, and data capturing ability and sorting ability and AI platforms, you name it, for a couple of dollars. So the cost of data or the cost of knowledge is approaching nothing, because everybody in a business does stuff. You do stuff. You need to know stuff. I mean, if you want to make a widget, you must know whether people want that widget or who else is making such a widget. So if you think about it, whatever you do in life is based on knowing what's going on around you. Whereas before, you'd find guys just doing stuff.
Winging it. That's what makes the internet so fantastic. I mean, you're 100% right when you say that, you know, everything is out there and available. I guess it's how you dissect that information.
Exactly. And that's what's so cool about the era we live in. If you really want to find out something, we 100% are way past digital. We're way into the fourth industrial revolution, as people call it. Yeah. We're in the knowledge economy. People are on about AI taking jobs. But trust me, which person under the age of 50 you don't know is not involved in some form of techie apps? I don't know, doing something in the way of technology-focused stuff. Those jobs did not exist 10 years ago. Yep. None of them. Not one. So I believe it's actually going to bring an explosion of better quality jobs.
Definitely. No, there's going to be a whole array of new requirements
stuff
for people to
do. Stuff we haven't even thought about.
Yeah, and stuff that technology, I mean, yes, technology will get clever, but whether people demand the human touch or whether people just, our guess would be better doing certain things themselves. So it will always be human involvement.
100%. And I mean, a lot of people are saying, you know what, everyone, you go to these restaurants and you see four really intelligent young guys sitting, or ladies, and sitting around the table all playing on their smartphones instead of talking. Uh-huh. I think that's a phase that'll go away, because truth be told, the interfaces we have today are very visual. Mm. They're very touch-based. They're very physical, is maybe the right word. But those physical interfaces are going to go away really, really, really quickly. I mean, I was joking about how dumb Siri is. I'm playing with iOS 12 right now. They've improved Siri by an order of magnitude. I mean, it's coming. They've done a lot of work. They've kept very quiet about it. But it's by an order of magnitude better
comparing
than
to the
older Siri.
Oh, to the older Siri. But comparing it to the other guys?
Difficult to say, because it's very beta, okay. Does weird stuff every now and then. But Google now has become so good, or the Google, you know, the Google voice activated platform has become so good. And also using the Amazon Alexa platform, within its skill set, they call them skills, is brilliant. I mean, I've been playing, it's a bit of a problem in South Africa.
How do you use it? Because I don't really use any of these voice assistants or AI assistants.
Very simple. My Alexa's hooked up to my... Because it's cool.
But what is your function?
My function at home on my Alexa thing is that I'm sitting in the lounge. It's connected to my Fire TV, which is a streaming box with all the Amazon services on it. And it's connected to a little Alexa box. So I sit there and I just simply, because of it's got great mics, you say, "Hey Alexa, what's the latest on TV tonight?" Simple query. And it scrolls through a whole host of things. Or, "Hey Alexa, I want to watch Suits."
Even for local channels? Yeah. So it plugs into your DSTV or not?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It's all internet-based stuff now. So anything to do with streaming, anything to do with connected services, it works. So if you ask it, "What's the latest movie by whomever?" It'll give you a whole range of them, and they pop up on your screen. You
see, say, I can appreciate that kind of thing. Having a clever entity at home, especially correct. If you have a family around. I mean, I'm just kind of living on my own, so you know, talking to the cats kind of gets that game for me. But
and they listen as well as Alexa.
They just
like
can't give me
feedback.
You, there's no clever feedback, unfortunately. But having something at home, instead of picking up your phone to say who is this? It's a big thing if you can take your eyes off a screen and just get
And here's the thing. I have a little IP camera by my front door. And the front door rings. And I say, "Hey, Alexa, who's at the front door?" And a screen pops up on my TV with the camera.
That's cool.
It's that
that's
type cool. of stuff. And if I had a lock, which I don't, it's something I'm going to get. If I had a lock that was connected to the whole thing, I'd say, "Hey, Alexa, it's Jim. Unlock the door." In fact, it might get to the point where Alexa says, "Jim's just walked in, I let him in."
Yeah, because you say yes every time, and then the one time you don't want him there.
Exactly. Yeah, and then Jim, you know, you don't want Jim to come in, you have to put him on the blackout list. But it's that type of stuff that I use it for. And you're often sitting around and you're talking and you're arguing about something, and you go, "Hey, let's just ask Mr. Google." So you ask Alexa, "Hey Alexa, who's the person who played soccer in the 40s, I don't know, any random thing.
You've just woken up everybody's Alexa is listening to this podcast.
Well, you know, that was a thing at the, last year's World Game or whatever in America. Amazon did an advert of Alexa buying toilet paper.
Oh, no, that was...
And the advert on TV went through the process of ordering toilet paper from Amazon.
For everybody who
had a TV connected. They had like 50 million orders of this particular toilet paper. They had to stop it. It was actually a huge problem.
Well, these are problems now, and I guess we'll overcome them, but the skeptics must always,
you know what,
how
that it
hard
did.
Do we do that?
What that brought in, within 2 months, the developers had figured out a way for Alexa to know who is speaking. So now it is not just anybody who walks into the room and says, "Hey, Alexa." You actually train it with your voice. So it recognizes your voice.
Now, here's another aspect to that. Then, in the era of Photoshop for voice and Photoshop for everything these days. We can manipulate. I mean, you've seen these videos of the president, President Obama and Putin having a conversation. Or was it, sorry, it was Trump and Putin having a conversation, but it was all fake.
Yeah.
It wasn't real.
It was talking heads.
Well, so it's like, where do you catch up, the virus or the antivirus?
Who knows? The thing is that the same as fingerprints, for example, it's cold now. A lot of people have poor circulation. Well, did you know that the fingerprint readers on a lot of the new phones won't work unless they can measure the blood flow beneath your fingers? So the fingerprint, people are probably moaning right now that this damn phone won't unlock. It's because your circulation is poor.
Interesting. So what do zombies do when they want to unlock?
Well, zombies can't unlock your cell phone. That's it. We saved from the zombie apocalypse. They can't steal your passwords.
So the smartphone, I mean, we've talked about futuristic tech and everything, but I think if you were to put in any era, if you talk 100 years into the future, talk about the piece of technology that really changed everything.
We're looking back from the future.
We're backerists. The single piece of technology that must have revolutionized or had the most impact on the technology sector that we have today is the smartphone or the smart device that you carry around with you, right?
You're right, but I'd just like to add a nuance to that. What actually transformed everything was the ability to connect to the internet via a very simple mobile device. So it was the actual, I don't know which one came first, but the ability to actually use the internet, which was the place for computers at one point, on a simple handheld device changed absolutely everything. So the one didn't work, but we did have phones before the internet.
I agree with you, but what I was trying to say was definitely that. The smart device, the screen.
Correct.
I remember playing with the first, what was it called? The with the Joey. I think HTC iMate guys made it before HTC and iMate were a thing. It was a little Palm-like device. It was a competitor to Palm. Beautiful screen, ran Windows. And it was a fantastic device, but it didn't have internet connectivity, right? Or you could connect, but there wasn't no apps. There were no internet pages.
So you could do your diary on it. You'd have to plug it into your computer to sync it.
You could send mails. You could do web browsing.
Only by syncing, yes. There was no web browsing.
But there was. They did bring them out eventually with a wireless adapter, and then you could connect to Wi-Fi, and then obviously your mobile became a thing. But you're right. But I think they go hand in hand. The technology of that smart connected tricorder-like device in your hand.
They were playing with those things in the movies 20 years before they hit the streets. But there's no question that the ability for things to connect, phones to connect, stuff like this, has utterly transformed humanity. The planet will never be the same place simply because of this connectivity. And if anything, it's going to get deeper and deeper and deeper. And going forward, not even into the far future, the connectivity will become so much part of what we do, self-driving cars, or even not self-driving cars. There was a trial very recently between Ford, Volvo, and a couple of other manufacturers where they weren't talking about autonomous vehicles. They were talking about connected vehicles amongst themselves using 5G technology.
If all the cars can talk to each other, know where they are in relation to each other.
Exactly. So if you're screaming up behind a car and you've fallen asleep at the wheel and the car in front is shouting at the car behind, guys, this is not looking good. The car can wake you up, make a noise, blow
or
a hooter,
slam the brakes
at the same time to stop all sorts of accidents. So the connectivity at that level is totally human-based, but with a level of autonomy that can only improve life and traffic and all sorts of things that can drive you nuts if you know cars are doing things. I mean, I don't know if you've noticed, but in the afternoons coming out of Santon, you can see which guys are using Waze. You can absolutely see which guys are using Waze. They're all taking the same route. They're all ducking into the most arbitrary little roads you never thought about.
The roads that I've been taking for years before Waze.
Some of us are meat GPSs, what can I say?
My phone GPS, I use it everywhere I go. I mean, even if I know where I'm going to, I put it on because I often want to redirect. And because you don't know a lot of the routes around your main route,
you don't know what's there.
You also don't know what's there.
That's the most important thing.
Zoom out quickly, see what the location is, quick getaway routes if you need that type of thing. I mean, again, information that's driving your decision to drive, right?
Exactly. And it's that sort of predictive stuff and that sort of information that's in the pocket of your in your pocket, in your hand. It's just absolutely ridiculous. And you get used to it so quickly that you can't imagine living without it. And that's the universe
that's
we live in.
That's the reality we're living in. Yep. Just hope that solar flare doesn't EMP the
entire planet. EMP takeout.
That could be a problem.
Well, that's a real post-apocalyptic type vibe.
Nobody knows when it's going to happen, but it's a real thing. It could happen, you know. It's not like this has never happened in the history of the world before. I think there was a reported case in the 1800s, just before electricity became a thing, and they had some, I think most of the world's telegraph towers were blown out by an EMP.
I haven't heard of that.
I must actually go.
That's actually very interesting.
But it wasn't a massive impact because it was only telegraph towers. Nothing else was connected. There was no other technology. So, yeah, we're living in interesting times.
Well, listen, interestingly enough, having spoken to a couple of the guys, you know, Microsoft have recently, in the last 2 years, they had a couple of these security conferences. And I actually happened to speak to a guy about this. And the thing, the big news then, was the Russians hacking the power grid.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that whole story.
And they actually ended up backing the presidential election.
Yeah.
I
don't know which is worse. But anyway, but what this guy was saying about this whole story with the hacking of the grids is that in many ways, because of this EMP and security, a lot of these things are super hardened against these sort of attacks. Because we don't need a solar flare to take everything out. There are nuclear weapons that can generate massive EMP shocks, etc., etc.
Everybody will get affected with a global kind of.
Well, think of the chaos that ensues in Joburg when the power goes out,
or when it rains.
Well, let's not go there. But I mean, the truth is, with all this ESCOM stuff, we've been living in a universe. All right, you got to have a generator and whatnot. But think about what goes on at work when the computers go down. No one can do anything. People leave work. Now, that's the world you live in. So imagine if they go down or the network goes down permanently.
Well, we remember a few years ago when Seacom went down.
Yeah.
It was a problem. Yeah. You know, everybody's internet went because that was the only capacity we had. Now, just to kind of move on before we get to the end of the show, I mean, we talk about cell phones throughout this conversation. And one of the things I really wanted to pick your brain about is, I mean, obviously mobile phones now are fantastic. There are so many great devices, so many great options. But they all look the same. They all pretty much function the same. I mean, and this does support what you were saying earlier, where we are moving away from the kind of gadget era. There's only so much you can – there's only so many ways you can reinvent the wheel or the form factor. I mean, I'm very happy with a square-shaped phone, some nice glass in front, not too thick. You know, I don't mind a thicker phone as long as the battery's there. But what is the future of this device that we love so much that's in our pocket? Are we going to see something new in the next few years that's really going to blow our minds?
I don't think so. As I said, I think that the gadget itself will dematerialize into an ecosystem and based on all sorts of platforms. I love these words. But anyway,
platforms, yeah.
The functionality that you obtain from these various devices will become part and parcel of every device. So a car without a screen, a car without connectivity, which will have Waze and all the stuff on it, will become something you can't buy. So you won't need to use your smartphone for Waze because the car itself will have all that built in.
But your phone will still be an important part of your
person,
right?
Yes and no.
Or some device.
A portable communication device or one that's part of your daily sort of put in your pocket. But it might, because everything has got screens and because a lot of things will have voice and a lot of things will be visual. So a holographic type, I know this sounds like science fiction, but it's not.
It sounds very plausible.
There are a lot of them out there that are doing it. You'll be able to get little pop-up information wherever you go. So because your information and everything's connected will follow you wherever you go, the need for a personal touchscreen type device may not be needed. So the smartphone might become a credit card or a type of little disc that you keep on your keyring, which will then interface with everything you connect. So the screens will become the screens in your car, the screens at your desk, the screens on your wrist. There'll be a million different ways for you to communicate using multiple different screens and holographic type projector things and stuff. So you'll walk into an elevator or a lift, as we call it in South Africa, and there'll be a screen in there and you'll need to know something. You'll be able to ask your personal device to just put it up on the screen there. So
I just hope those, I guess it's going to make
it public and some of it's not.
Some of it's going to be public, some of it's going to be private. I guess I've seen this type of thing in at least one movie before where you throw things
around.
I'm not talking about Minority Report here.
Oh, but you've got it now. I've got a keyboard that can do that. I mean, I take a keyboard. I've got one keyboard for two computers, totally separate computers.
Yes.
And I just swipe from the one to the other, and it sends the doc to the other computer.
What app is that? What app are you using?
It's an app that comes with the Logitech keyboard.
Oh, I must look into that.
Have a look at it. So what you can do, and the mouse. So you can actually simply.
So it's a hardware thing, not a software.
It's hardware combined hardware and software. As long as I'm on the same network, I can share a document across two completely separate things using the keyboard. So I just swipe across and boom, the information moves across.
I just use Dropbox for that, but I like your idea. You're way better.
But this works just as well. Then you can work on it on this one. Let's say it's a very powerful computer, like you've got a couple lying around here and you want to do some really heavy graphics or some stuff on video, and you just want to send it to another computer to watch. Which is great. So you can just do that. And you can move stuff around. And ultimately, data will be wherever you need it. The day of having data in discrete pockets wherever is gone. Phones will have to be smart and computers will need to be powerful. Mm-hmm. But more and more, a 128 gig SSD is more than good enough. Because who stores everything on their computer? I mean, you used to have a ton of music, a ton of movies, a ton of books, a whole lot of other assorted rubbish downloads. I mean,
you never need to save files anymore. Remember, we had CDs worth of download installers just to keep for testing.
And then we had hard drives full of stuff because you never knew when you would need it again. Now you just download it again.
My favorite story to tell, I'm sure you can appreciate this because you're also in a fiber neighborhood, but I'm playing with a 1 gigabit connection here. So fortunately, downloading anything is so easy. Like a 64 meg installer game file to do some benchmarks.
It's trivial. Couple of
15
seconds.
Minutes. Yeah. Not having that, it does limit certain things still. But fiber in general is, I mean, you can do anything with
it. But it's not even fiber. Fiber's the backbone. There's no question fiber's an amazing thing. But I mean, I played with some of the real commercial trials of 5G. There's cities in America going live with 5G right now. We're talking 1 gigabit per second connections are standard across mobile devices.
Has 5G been standardized?
Yes. The final standard hasn't been ratified. That'll only
but
happen.
But it's not an open thing where everybody's
going. No. They know the standard.
Going in a direction.
It's all standardized. Okay. They know exactly where they're going. There are a couple of little wrinkles that'll change, or maybe a couple of little added functionalities and rules that might be tweaked. But the basic standard exists. It's here. It's available. They understand exactly where it works. The frequencies have been harmonized across the world. The basic connectivity has been done. The reason they're going 5, why they're going 5G, apart from the fact that they want to be ahead of the game, is that they're doing fixed wireless connectivity. It's not on a handset yet, though those will hit the streets next year.
Sure.
Guaranteed next year there will be 5G-based Samsungs and iPhones, Samsung.
Samsung
and those, and Huawei.
Oh, yeah.
They are way ahead on that stuff. And they'll definitely be out there. But what they're doing with Ericsson and our friends at, I've gone blank, Nokia.
Oh, yes.
Because remember, the Chinese are not allowed in America.
Yeah.
But so it saved Ericsson and Nokia having 5G
in
America.
I'm sure they were very happy about that.
Oh, very happy. Oh, yeah. Anyway, they're rolling out these systems, and they're rolling out little like modems, MiFi modems.
Everywhere, and it just covers everything.
And you've got massive, massive speed and connectivity. But it's not the speed. It's the sheer capacity. Mm. So thinking about a 1 gig line to the home as being absolutely mind-bogglingly revolutionary right now, in 2 years' time, it'll be commonplace.
Yeah.
You're only on a 100 meg line? I mean, how could you live with a 100 meg line?
But it does get to a point, too. I mean, and this is why refer to it as fiber because I just love my fiber connection. Mm. But once you get to a point, and I think fiber in South Africa, we've kind of seen the progress from dial-up. We've been there within the last 15 years, really.
Absolutely.
From dial-up only to ADSL, when ADSL came, it was the best thing. 3 gig for 500 or 600 bucks. You only had 3 gigs of data. It was 512, I think, at max. You get to a point where, I mean, at a gig fiber, at a gig connection, like what I'm seeing here is 200 meg is probably the most you really need because a lot of servers cap out at about 200 meg.
Well,
so the data you get is only going to come down at a certain speed.
We're also, let me tell you something, this whole fiber to the home is a bit of a scam in South Africa.
No, don't say that.
I'm telling you, it's a scam.
Please tell me.
I'll tell you, and it's something I'm going to do a lot more work on, something I've been thinking about a lot. The fact that you've got a 200 meg or a 1 gig connection between you and the ISP is one thing.
For sure, for sure.
Easy to do because fiber essentially has unlimited capacity. There is no contention that link.
Yeah.
When you get behind the scenes at the ISP, things change dramatically. Suddenly, you contend like mad. So the average home connection could be contended 50 to 1.
Also depends on the ISP, right?
It does depend on the ISP, but all of them for consumer grade in order to make a bit of money. When you're paying and you're paying 30,000 rand a month for a 100 meg line, you know you've got a 1 to 1 connection to the internet and no one's on it. Mm. With a consumer where you're paying 1,500 rand for that line, you know there's at least 50 homes or 50 other users contending your line. And then the capacity from the ISP to the global internet suddenly becomes massively contended for what you're doing. So you might have 1,000 megs to the ISP, and then things slow down dramatically thereafter.
But again, I mean, the ISPs that do that in a bad way, obviously, you know, they're going to lose service, people are going to start talking. But the guys that don't, I mean,
correct,
the guys that I'm with, Cell C, for example, they offer... I have only had good service with them because I've never had a day's worth of kind of contention issues or download issues or, you know, just capacity issues.
Correct.
And I'm not saying they're the only guys, but it comes down to your experience, and I would advocate that to other guys.
No, yeah. No question. I think, but the problem is it's not very easy to understand what's happening because the gap from a 10 meg ADSL line to a 100 meg fiber line is already so dramatically better that you don't realize what's going on. But try running 2 4K TV streaming in a home at any point in time along with 30 other devices. And I don't know who has that. It's probably someone in this room.
I'm looking at him.
Even on a 200 meg line, you run into trouble.
Really?
Yes.
So it's about, let's say a handful of devices, 20 or 30, with two large 4K TVs.
Running two 4K TVs and a couple of other devices running in the house at the same time using a high-speed mesh network and fixed line for a whole lot of other devices, I run into trouble.
What routers are you using? What wireless routers?
The wireless routers I'm using are something called Fritzboxes.
Oh, I've never heard
of that. Now, Fritzbox are one of the biggest manufacturers of CPE or consumer premises equipment in Germany, and they very, very good devices. They've got two things that most people don't even realize you need in a Wi-Fi router: very fast processors and lots of memory. And think about it, when you had a 10 meg ADSL line, how fast did the data move? It was incredibly slow. But when you're talking about 200 meg line, and the average speed for a 4K TV is 15 megabits per second, not megabytes, megabits per second to sustain a 4K stream. So your Wi-Fi's got to be capable of that on a continual basis. Your network's got to be capable of that on a continual basis. And all at the same time, it's still busy talking to all sorts of other devices. So your iPhones are updating, your Android phones are playing games. You know, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Your stuff is all talking. And if the processor in the little router is not able to deal with that traffic, it starts bogging down. And so many people get these cheap, horrible little routers, like the giveaways, the 300 and 400 buck or 500 buck ones, and then they wonder why their Wi-Fi is so shitty, or they're always there rebooting, because what happens, the tiny little processors there either run out of capacity, or they run out of memory, and then the thing crashes, so then it freezes, then it won't give you an IP address, you can't connect, then you go and reboot it.
On the complaints groups where people say my Wi-Fi isn't working. I think that's kind of the consumer's next, you know, understanding what technology needs to work.
And mesh networks and things like this really make a difference.
Running one of those here. And to be honest with you, from moving away from the bundled router that came with my fiber connection to a mesh router, it's the Netgear Orbi.
Well, that's the same sort of thing.
And I'm getting 400 meg Wi-Fi speeds anywhere in this house, anywhere on the property. Even in the corner there, it drops down to about 50, I think, behind all the seven
and
walls.
Those are the sort of things that make a huge difference. I mean, this Fritzbox router, for example, connects itself when it works the mesh. I'm getting a connection between box to box of 975 megs because it's using a 3x3 MIMO connection.
It's a separate dedicated channel.
And it's a completely separate channel, which doesn't affect Wi-Fi. So it's actually better than running, almost as good as running a physical cable.
Yeah, and if you look at the time and effort you spend, I've ran cables here, and
it is South Africa has a problem. There's bricks and mortar and all sorts of things. It's hard to run cables. In America, it's easy. You know, it's, everything's chipboard.
But up until now, it was really the only solution to get an access point somewhere.
And that's the sort of thing that you got to worry about in your home. So having a fast fiber connection is one thing, but then all this other stuff. And when you tell someone, go out and spend $3,000 on a router, they go, are you mad? Why would I spend $3,000 to $5,000 on a router? And then you explain, guys,
amazing bandwidth that
you've got 100 megs coming in, and you've got all this stuff connecting to it, and you've got this horrible little piece of 20s tech, for want of a better word, trying to cope with it. It does not work.
No, I agree with you 100%. And on that note, thank you so much for your time, Stephen. I really appreciate it. In closing, tell me, what is the best gadget you've played with in the last 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks? I mean, what is something that really stood out for you? Because you always have some interesting things.
I've always got
right
cool
now. How
rubbish.
Many fans are you carrying on you right now?
Only four.
And you wonder why your 200 meg connection isn't holding up.
Well, at any point in time, here's the interesting thing. I have between 40 and 50 active devices connected to my home network.
I love it. I want to come there and I want to see the stats on your
router. You must see what's going on. It's just crazy.
How much data are you using a month?
Between 900 and 1.1 terabytes.
Nice. That's a nice whole.
Well, here's the thing. A 4K movie is 30 gigs an hour. 30 gigs of data an hour to watch a 4K movie, and I have two 4K TVs.
I don't stream 4K then.
But once you stream 4K, you can't go back. The other day, here we go, contention.
No, we're digressing again. Like,
anyway.
Let's go for it.
I was watching, and suddenly my TV went fuzzy. It dropped down to full HD.
What? That's unacceptable.
The internet was something going on, and I couldn't watch. It was horrible. How can you watch in not 4K when you've got 4K? So anyway, that's a whole nother story.
That's, not many
at 30
have
gigs
that.
An hour.
Yeah, my 720
first world problems, boys.
Still works very
No. Once you've gone 4K, you can never go back. And I've actually seen commercial 8K. So
the game is on. Yeah,
the game is on.
But let's not.
The coolest little gadget I've played with, I had a problem. Well, I didn't have a problem. I had a solution to a problem. No more copper. Had it with Telkom. Tired of phone lines and crackly connections and unplugging stuff when the lightning came. So I thought, you know what? Got fiber. It's time to move on to the new world. Ported my landline number, which three people, my gran, two aunts, and I don't know who else phone.
Important people who need these landline
phones. Important people who
use
landlines, but they needed my landline phone. I own it. I've owned it for 20 years. Why would I change my landline phone? So I ported my landline phone to a particular company. I won't mention names now, but there are a couple out there. A lot of ISPs, a lot of people do it. So I ported my number across, cost me $150. It now costs me R45 a month to own my number. And that's based on something they call SIP, SIP client. And all you need is a username, a password, and an address. With those three things, you can connect any SIP-based client, be it cell phone-based, be it PC-based, be it a portable phone, to the SIP client, and your number works like a bomb wherever you are in the world. The problem is most portable phones in the home are DECT-based. Those are the ones with the little base station, and you had to plug it into the wall. And there are SIP DECT clients, tons of them out there. Otherwise, there's SIP phones which you've got to plug in using Ethernet connection, which are all a bit clunky and a bit cumbersome. And this company called Nology, they're a local distributor of all sorts of stuff, brought out a portable Wi-Fi-based phone. So it's basically a phone without a SIM card. So you get it. It looks like a normal portable phone. It's got a SIP client built in and a Wi-Fi connection. So you connect it to your Wi-Fi, you input your password, your username, and your SIP client address. Yep. Boom, you connect it. The best part is you can take it with you wherever you go, anywhere in the world. As long as you connect it to some Wi-Fi network somewhere, it works.
You can connect your portable phone.
I connected it to my cell phone.
That's awesome.
I connected my cell phone's Wi-Fi hotspot, and my home phone worked.
So, I mean, here's a... Why use something like that over just an app on your phone, a SIP app on your phone?
Because you can, you know, your cell phone has particular things. You go out with your cell phone. If you want to leave a phone at home, it's probably a home-based phone. It's an anachronism.
Or a business phone.
If you've got a business line, you don't want to have it on your home phone. It's just a great solution because it's Wi-Fi based. It's simple. It works wherever you got Wi-Fi. Decked often you had problems. You know, if you moved out of the room, it crackled. Mm-hmm. The range wasn't so great. So you got a mesh network. You can wander down to the bottom of your garden.
Good point.
And it's just a clever, simple little solution, and it sells for about 1,200 rand. And so you're going to see guys popping up at the local coffee shop using their home phone or their office phone. I mean, I've got a SIP client on my cell phone, mm-hmm. and I can receive my office number of calls on it. But it's just a cool solution because a lot of people want to keep their home phone separate to their cell phone. Okay. That's probably the only real reason.
And I think, I mean, another reason, I guess, is, and we won't have this reason for long, is older generation people who just want a phone that can just do one thing.
Correct.
Just giving them a device like this on their network, you know, and you can take the charges away from any other landline-based number.
Same thing happened for my father. I did the same thing for him. He's in Parkhurst. He's got a landline. Again, I think three aunts and a cousin know that number, and myself. But he wants a landline.
Yeah.
He's got his cell phone.
Love it.
Also, I must tell you something. Where he lives in Parkhurst, for whatever reason, the signal's always terrible. You can never hear him.
That's one of the reasons I started with their rollout project, fiber to the home there.
Correct.
Because they had issues with mobile. None of the mobile companies
also,
were to service.
A lot of places have got tin roofs,
yeah,
which make perfect thing. Faraday cave. Cages. So he's got a tin roof. So you walk into his house, cell phone signal's gone.
Like a good safe house, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Tin hat house. So it makes perfect sense in a case like that to have a SIP based or to have an alternative. And this is a great alternative.
Definitely check them out. I say Nology, right?
Nology. It's a 300. I forget the number. But it's a Wi-Fi based SIP phone. It's on their website. You can find it. I've seen it on Take a Lot. And it's around about 1,200 rand, and it's really a cool little gadget.
Fantastic. Well, we'll definitely be playing with that. Thank you again, Stephen, for your time. Really appreciate it. Where can people find you online?
You can catch me on Twitter at Ambia, or on my website, strategyworks.co.za, or techhuman.com. Or, if you really want to see all my reviews, you can go to bebrief.co.za. Lots of reviews, lots of interesting stuff on that too.
Fantastic. Well, we'll be seeing each other at the next event, I'm sure. Have you been playing with your Legos yet from last night's event?
They're on the wall. I see yours is on your desk.
Mounted and ready
cool.
to go. Yeah, geeks talking. We'll be back chatting about that probably at one point again. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is The Best in Tech with Rehard and Stephen, and we'll be back again soon. Cheers.